comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be a million other places doing a million other things. Thank you for being here. We are here because you have a right to know and because you matter. Now, my guest tonight is Captain Robert MacDonald, the man who reported to us from on board a recovery ship in the Baltic Sea. You remember that show. He's back with us tonight. But tonight, we'll be hearing more detail about his Viking ship and his encounter, that ship's encounter, with the strange and unexplained. And it is, I've got to tell you, quite a story. So I recommend you put on your seatbelt, buckle it tight. This is quite a story. We have here at the Kevin Smith Show a members community. The members community has all kinds of extra goodies. You know, it's always free to listen to this show. People all around the world are listening to this show every night. I even found that we have listeners in Botswana. I'm not kidding. I had no idea we had listeners in Botswana, but we do. But people all over the world are listening to this show, and it's absolutely free. But we have some really special things in our members community for only $7.50 a month. Now, that comes out to 25 cents a day, and we'll give you the first 7 days free. But you need to take advantage of that pretty soon because it is a limited time offer. For just 25 cents a day, $7.50 a month, you get to watch the show live. Not only do you get to watch the show live, you get access to our archives. And by the way, the archives are podcasted. And what that means is, we have taken the commercial breaks out. And so it's just the show with no breaks. Plus, they are on an RSS feed, meaning those of you who have iPods or other such devices can download them to your iPod or other such devices. So anyway, that's pretty cool. And then we have forums, we have chat, you get your own blog page, you get your own photo gallery, you get your own video gallery where you can upload video clips, and it's just great. It really is. There's a lot of stuff going on in the members area, in the members community, and we would like for you to be a part of it. We want you to be a part of our group in the members community. And it's only $7.50 a month to do that, but if you decide not to, you can listen free every single night. I will be speaking at the Alchemy event that begins on 11-11-11, November the 11th. It goes through the 13th. On the 13th, I will be speaking there, and I hope you'll come and meet me. I want to meet you personally. I don't just want you to come see me or come hear me. I want to meet you. It's going to be in Los Angeles. So let me invite you to go over to alchemyevent.com and register. But if you can't be there in person, at least register for the online streaming and catch it live. All right, we're going to step away for a break, and we'll be back with Captain Robert MacDonald right after this. right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Captain Robert McDonald is captain of a ship, a very special ship, and it's a Viking ship. Now, that is pretty special all by itself, but there's more. It's a ship constructed of ice cream sticks donated by children from all over the Netherlands. Now, that's really special. But there is even more to this story. This ship sailed into UFO history, ladies and gentlemen, and here to tell us all about it is Captain Robert McDonald. He was with us already, as I said earlier, speaking to us from on board of a ship in the Baltic Sea and reporting to us about that recovery effort. But he's back with us tonight to talk about this adventure. And Captain Robert McDonald, welcome back to the show. Delighted to have you.
It is a pleasure to be back with you, Kevin. Enjoy your audience.
Well, thank you. I've got to start off with what gave you the idea of building a ship with ice cream sticks.
Well, that started a while back. Some little kids came running up to me. They had skint their knees and stuff, and they came running to me. Hey, Rob, look what happened to us, Mr. Rob. What can we do? I said, you threw them down all summer long. You get all your schoolmates together. You pick up the sticks and bring them to me, and I'll make you some neat little boats. Which I did, and they played with in the local lakes and canals, and the idea got pretty popular. And I made a model ship, a rather large one, and some kids, one of the parents actually came to my home and said, hey, that looks like some type of world record. A light bulb went off in my head. I had built a smaller boat out of 375,000 ice cream sticks, about a two-man boat, a Viking boat, which now sits in the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in Bangalore, India at the moment. Well, that gave me the knowledge. I thought, hey, I could build this on any scale. And my whole thing that I do is to teach children anything, absolutely anything is possible. With that in mind, I set out the motion to build a Viking ship out of 15 million ice cream sticks. And we're talking about a real ship by Viking standards. That's 1-inch thick planks under the keel, and just every dynamic, and then I wanted to go beyond that. So we went ahead and constructed this ship. I called on the 5,000 children. That's where I got the nickname over here as the Pied Piper of Children. I blew my flute and they came. And they came not from just Holland, they came from all over Europe. And over the next year and a half to 2 years, we constructed this giant ship. We placed it into the water in Amsterdam to 10 world records right off the bat. It is the world's largest recycled object. One of the world records is it's the largest floating sculpture, but a functioning sculpture, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And I had the builders out of Denmark, Roskilde, Denmark, who actually build these Viking ships and have done so for 700 years, come out to inspect it, and they said it's absolutely perfect. We made it exactly. It's a Viking ship by anybody's standards, a replica. And we then set out during the construction. I was already planning the mission, seeking out old maps, and I actually found one from the VOC going back in the 1540s, and a route that nobody takes. I wanted my route to be as original as the boat was.
Okay, now look, before I want to hear that, but before we get into that, I have a question about the construction.
Sure.
How do you make a ship out of ice cream sticks? I mean, what do you glue them together, or I mean, what do you do?
Well, I had created the ship. I had to pick the size. The traditional Viking ship is 45 foot. So I had to create my own construction ideas. I mean, this is totally original. Nobody's ever done it. So I created molds for each plank. So the children can just lay the sticks in the mold. And the idea is they go in one direction, 45 feet, and then they turn around and place the sticks in the opposite direction on the same mold and go in the other direction. So much like your fingers interlaced, the sticks were interlaced. during the construction till they reached the 1-inch thick period. And then as for the Viking ship itself, the shape and the ribs and what have you, is I had pre-cut molds on tables and then a sheet of plastic where kids can just look at the pattern. There's no measurements involved, no thinking involved. They just glue the sticks to the pattern. And basically, it was about having a lot of fun. At the same time, during the construction, I had it in my mind to make world history with the boat, to actually make it a genuine ship. To make sure we had it right, we had placed an oak plank at the from Roskilde, Denmark, at 45 foot next to one of my 45 foot planks. They were equally as thick, so I was pretty impressed right off that I could pull this, that I could do this. They bent the planks, and the oak plank broke at, I think it was 25% bend, and my planks did a complete 360. So I knew I was on the right track.
So, and what are your planks made of?
Ice cream sticks and glue.
That's it. The whole ship, everything
the
about it.
The entire ship, yeah, the entire ship.
Well, now, do you have some kind of special glue that water does not affect, or have you...
Actually, we did. I had to... The process took half a year just to get ready. I needed roughly 5 tons of glue, and I wanted saltwater-proof glue, and I wanted it to be biodegradable to my specifications, and the glue just didn't exist. So I had the company create it. They went to the laboratories and found a recipe from an old hippie in America who they bought the recipe from. It's not something they could sell because they've never tested it. So they said they would make me 5 tons of it just for me, and I could use this. It absolutely rejects salt water.
So you don't have you're not nervous at all when you set out to sea.
Absolutely not. No way. The ship, if you knock 10 holes in it, it still wouldn't sink.
Let me say to the audience, folks, there's two ways to see this ship, okay? One way is go to Google Images and do ice cream stick Viking ship. And all kinds of pictures come up. Or you can go to my website and just look at the picture about tonight's show, and you can see this 45-foot Viking ship in the water with people in it. And I'm not sure, Robert, where was that picture taken?
The picture you have displayed was the very day we broke the world record at Sail Amsterdam. We were the opening act in 2005 when we first placed the boat into the water. And we had 87 people on board at the time, which is a normal crew for a Viking ship.
87 people in 45
yeah, 87
feet?
Kids with, yeah, to row the boat. At that time, we had oars. The idea was to break the world record and then build the ship for the big dream, which was to cross the North Sea over to England and then to carry on to America. That was the original dream of the ship.
Okay. I want to go back to you chose a route. You were about to tell us about that. You chose a route nobody sails anymore.
That's correct.
Why do they not sail it?
You know, at the time, I wanted to, like I was saying, I wanted to create a route that nobody has done. I wanted to be completely original as the boat was because the kids worked so hard on it. So I found this old map from the VOC Trading Company in Holland, and it seemed to have only this particular... a place only had one route, which the VOC normally didn't take, so I found the map unique all by itself. It was from Den Helder crossing a special direction over to England. And later I learned that Den Helder, roughly translated, means Hell's Gate. At the time, I didn't know that.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, well, I didn't know it at the time. I just knew Den Helder and the route. I liked what caught my attention to the whole thing is the adventure side of it is there was little skull and crossbones on the route itself, which I found very fascinating. And there was set up in a triangle of these skulls in the middle of the sea, which I also thought was really cool. And all it said was NTSVOC. That was the name of the map. And there was no other record of this map. So it was kind of cool having an original map.
So did you sail that route?
I did. I took a brand... Everything on the ship, you must remember, is brand new. The GPS, everything about the ship was brand new. So we placed into the GPS this exact route. Everything mentioned in the route was used directly from the map. So we knew our ship would go exactly as the map said. And for me, that was the, you know, the old pirate adventure. I had a crew of 9 on board, and my crew was international. They were from all over the world. So that was also unique to have a crew that could be from all over the world. And we went in to tell her it was April 5th. We set sail. And almost 8 hours, I guess it was 8 hours into the mission, one of my crewmates on board, one of the young lady crewmates, we had, let's see, Doc Maddie was on the rudder at the time, a medical doctor. She had just graduated school, so she was a new doctor waiting on her job, and she was behind the rudder at the time. I had her on the helm. It's a very busy boat. If you've ever seen a Viking ship at sail, somebody's always on a rope, so the whole crew was busy. And about that time, the youngest member of the boat looked over the side, a young lady, and she said, "Captain, look at this little cool sparkles." Now, we were doing at the time 14 knots, which is close to 35 miles an hour, which is extremely fast for any sailboat. But the Viking ships, for those who don't know it, are giant windsurfers. They don't have a keel. They ride strictly on top of the wave at speed. The boat literally lifts up and just like a feather on top of the water. They just fly. I mean, absolutely enormous speeds in these boats. At that time, we had a very strong wind at our backs, which is all you could ever dream for in a Viking ship. So we were at top speed, and she said, "Look over at the sparkles," and I looked to the side. Well, you know, in the South North Sea, I had seen green algae. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. They glow
yes.
fluorescent. Beautiful mm-hmm. fluorescent colors. Well, this was bright orange. And I'm thinking, oh, it's got to be the prettiest thing I've ever seen, but, you know, I really thought nothing of it. I said, "Beautiful." And probably 10 to 15 minutes later, I was noticing these colors darting from the left to the right, to the front, to the back, which I found very odd. I looked up, of course, at the sky to see what the sun was doing, you know, and the sun was in the clouds. So then I started really paying attention to it because, you know, this isn't normal. But I kept very quiet. I didn't want to alert the crew. So I sent the night shift, what we call the night shift crew. It's a 3-day crossing. So I sent the night shift crew into the cabins to sleep. And we had the 4-man day crew on board. And about that time, maybe an hour later, Doc, into the journey, this thing was still keeping pace with us. And Doc Maddie screamed out, "Captain, the rudder is vibrating. But this is absolutely impossible. You're talking about a 7-foot-tall oak rudder, 1 foot thick. It weighs close to a ton all by itself." We had it bracketed onto the boat with big iron connections. We didn't want to use rope connections like traditional Viking ships because they break and they're unreliable. So we had big iron mounts. In other words, if you were to try to remove the rudder, you're removing that part of the ship completely. So she said the rudder's shaking. Well, that got my concern. Immediately, I screamed, "All hands on deck." I rang the alarm for the night shift. As soon as the cabin door opened, the first really thing I've noticed is a camera flash went completely over the deck really quick. I thought, okay, the sun just broke through the clouds. You know, I have to think of 50 things at once in an emergency situation. About that time, Doc Maddie, who was on the helm, screamed out, "Captain, the rudder's gone. It's just gone." Well, I kind of took that as an exaggeration from her point. Of course, these kids have never been on a Viking boat, so, you know, other than rehearsing with me, so I thought, you know, this is just funny. And I looked over there, I walked over there to her position, and yeah, the rudder was completely gone.
Well, now, I understand it's gone, but the way it was mm-hmm. attached to the ship, if something broke it off, it was supposed to break off that part of the ship too, right?
It should have taken that entire side of the ship away. Well, this happened, and then at the time, I didn't have time to know what it was, because the ship was still moving at 14 knots, only now you had to control it by the sail. Within a few seconds after she said it was gone, there was a huge impact. Everybody went flying all over the boat. Immediately, the mast came crashing down to the deck. The sail sheet came crashing down to the deck, and the mast, now, if you must understand, is like a small oak tree. It's quite large, and it's all one tree. And it came smashing down to the deck. It's the size of the boat. It's about 45 foot tall. Both the sail boom and the mast broke. Just broke on the impact of whatever. I knew we struck something. I just didn't know what it was.
Okay, now how far out to sea are you at this point?
At this point, we had traveled out almost 85 miles or 12 hours straight sailing. This
so there
12
should,
hours after we left.
Should be no reefs, no sandbars, no nothing.
No. We're out in the middle of nowhere, and according to the map I had available, the old map, we were dead center of the of this old map of the NTS. And okay, I'm in an emergency situation. Now the ship is totally adrift. For those of you who don't understand sailing, when you have a wind in back of you doing almost 40 miles an hour, and you have the tide changing, you have huge, huge swells. This is quite normal, which could just the swells along with the ship adrift could really tear a boat apart all by itself, or capsize the boat at the very least. But I noticed the ship was doing nothing. It was just perfectly still. So, okay, I screamed to the crew, clear the debris. So everybody started clearing the debris out of the way. You know, you go into emergency mode at that point. I yelled to our navigator. There was no rudder to worry about, so I yelled at the navigator, "Fine, you know, give me the GPS position." I didn't want to just go by my compass and a very old map. So he went there. He said, "It's dead, Captain." I said, "What?" He said, "The GPS." I said, "It can't be. These are all brand new." "Okay, what time do you have?" And start logging this down in my logbook. I was already busy with everything else on the deck. And he said, "I can't. My watch stopped." I looked at mine. It had stopped. I looked at the compass on the ship. Everything electronic was dead. I mean, everything. So you got to imagine my position, being out in the middle of nowhere. Everything dead on the ship. No way to call for help. The radio's gone. Everything's gone. And the object was at that point really, really, really bright, almost like a fluorescent light bulb just all the way around the boat.
Okay, we have to step away for a break, and that's a good place for us to leave everybody right on the edge of their seats. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest this evening, Captain Robert McDonald, and actually a record-breaking, record-making, historic ship that he's telling us about, and its journey from the dimension of the normal into the world of the strange and the unexplained. We shall return right after this.
Radio like nowhere else on earth.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Captain Robert McDonald. And when we went away for break, Robert, you were just telling us about the fact that you had struck something. The rudder is gone. All of your GPS is dead. Watches, compass, everything electronic has gone dead. And then we had to go to break. So if you will, just pick up there and take us forward.
Okay. Well, a lot of people must remember from the time we broke the world record to the time we set out on this adventure, we took away the oar holes, so there's no oars. We built two large cabins enclosed so the crew could sleep in quite luxury, actually. Well, okay, you got to imagine we're out there in the middle of nowhere. No way to communicate. We can see the shipping lanes, which is, for those who don't know it, it's like a highway for these five-story tall, giant shipping container freighters that travel to America and back. And it's quite a busy place. For them, they can't see us. We look like a peanut in the water to these guys. So we're adrift. heading, in my opinion, right for them. We have to send some kind of a warning. We're in trouble. So at that point, I saw no other choice rather than, say, abandon ship. We weren't in that kind of a shape, but I said, let's light the flares. We lit the first flare. Nothing happened. This is a handheld flare, and he waved it until literally it went out. Then we shot off the rocket flares from the handgun. And one of the large container ships, these are absolutely massive vessels, it came out of the shipping lane, was heading in our direction. And it parked, probably it stopped in the water. We saw it actually drop anchor, which I was amazed to see one of these ships do that. I mean, actually come towards us. And he dropped anchor probably about a quarter mile away from us. But between our boat at this point and his boat, the water was like glass. Everything around that circle was absolutely nice big swells and chops from the wind. I thought, this is, you know, what can I do? I said, okay, let's take the Zodiac. And I sent one of our crewmates. Now, you got to remember, this is a very small Zodiac, a two-man Zodiac. You're talking about a very small 10-horsepower motor, which is, this is normally meant for going from the ship to the shore. It's certainly not meant in this situation, but we always pull it behind our boat. We sent the Zodiac to the big ship. And it happened to be a Danish ship heading back for Denmark, full of whatever its cargo was, big containers. Okay, he didn't pull over because he saw us with the flares, but he didn't pull over for that reason. He pulled over because of an old Viking story. He recognized our ship through his binoculars as being a Viking ship. And as he was a child, there were stories about the Viking ships that could lift out of the water and fly. Okay. He could see something from his angle we couldn't see. And we noticed when my crewmate with the Zodiac headed out, he kept stopping and staring back at our boat. He's taking out photo cameras and flashing photographs. And I'm like, get on with this, you know. So I kept waving my flags, you know, go to this boat while you have the opportunity, because if the chop comes back, you know, you're dead for sure in a Zodiac like that. He noticed me waving the red flags, and he went on to the boat. And it's pretty far away, so how he got into that boat, I don't know. I guess he climbed up a ladder from the side. There's a door. We could see a door open towards the waterline of the big giant boat. He disappeared. He came back 30 minutes later and asked us to throw a ladder to him. We have rope ladders on the boat, and I thought, no, this is such a strange request, because we're only about 4 feet from the water. You know, you can actually stick your hand over the side to the water. Okay, we threw down the rope ladder. We didn't know. Maybe he was carrying something. How would I know? He climbed up in the boat and told us the story. The captain stopped for totally different reasons. However, he will call the rescue, the water rescue service. However, his radio was out. He had pulled over and he dropped anchor. He pulled over out of curiosity from what he was staring at. He wanted his crew to see this for themselves. He dropped anchor because he lost all power when he came into the area. So he couldn't call rescue either. So now you have two ships dead in the water in the same bit of space. We got the crewmate on board. As we're sitting there, suddenly, probably the biggest military seaplane I've ever seen, it's obviously the kind of plane that could land in water, was circling overhead of our boat. And we're like, well, somebody called a rescue. But I've never seen markings like that, but they obviously know we're here. They obviously know we're in trouble. And they circled about 10 times. And about that point, our ship started vibrating again, really, really heavy. I thought, I was worried about the ship breaking up, but I could not figure out what it was. The water was like glass, but the ship was just really violently shaking. And then suddenly, it's almost like if somebody was holding the ship in their hands and just let it go. There was a huge splash, and we all hit the we all fell to the bottom of the boat. Obviously, our boat was evidently high at that moment, because we hit the water really hard. This orange glow took off at some quite a speed, and this plane started going in pursuit of it. It circled one more time and then started heading in the direction of the orange object under the water. Probably 4 minutes after this happened, about four fighters loaded for bear came just screeching right by us at just insane speeds. Okay. Suddenly the lights of the freighters came on, and he was able to call the normal Coast Guard Rescue Service, they call it Reddings over here, to come out to us. Now remember, we had traveled 12 hours out there, so by the time, it was my opinion, by the time they reached us, we're either all over the shipping lanes or we're underneath that big freighter near us. The water went back to normal. And, of course, we're rocking all over the place. We're, you know, the crew was kind of worried about capsizing. It was a concern of mine, but there's absolutely nothing I could do. There's no way to control the boat. I had the inflatable. It's called an inflatable. It's in a big barrel. You throw it over the side, and it instantly inflates, and it's good for the entire crew. It's like a tent-covered thing. It's a rescue raft, if you want to call it that. It's part of the safety features on my boat. I yelled the ready, and that's to the crew. I yelled, make the ready, and that means they get ready to abandon ship. I didn't call abandon ship. They were just making ready to do such. They were placing on their ice suits. This is for jumping into the ice water. Life jackets, just the works. Place it on, get it on now. So everybody was busy doing that, and our filmer that was on board was also still filming, still continuing to film. But he worked for the World News Service, so I don't, you know, if he didn't want to put on life vests and that sort of things, I can't make him do it. He's not official crew. He's just a guest on the boat. It's all voluntary at that point. If you want to go down that way, okay. Yeah, that's the way I looked at him. And he kept on filming and taking photographs at the same time. The rescue service was on us within an hour, which, in my opinion, well, at that time, I knew there could only be one reason. That meant they were following us to begin with. They were on us way too quick. And it's just from the shoreline, it's absolutely impossible to reach us at that speed. I mean, this is a rubber raft. So, yeah, they showed up. And that made it more interesting. They hooked up to us and said they were going to pull us to shore. Of course, on shore, you know, I'm still filling out my captain's logs, and each crew member, I was having them fill out their forms of exactly what happened. Because I have to answer to someone, of course. Just in case the boat goes down on the way back, you still have to answer to someone. As captain of the boat, I'm responsible for everything. The boat was pulled back into the Helder, and it took them 12 hours to get us back. So the next morning, very early, we arrived back in the port of Den Helder. I'm waiting for the official inspectors. I saw them heading towards me, and these gentlemen in a black van with just white blank tags. I've never seen that before. They showed up and kind of met the inspectors halfway, the Coast Guard inspectors, and they started walking towards us. They took the paperwork from those gentlemen and started walking towards our ship.
Okay, can you describe them for us? How were they dressed?
Yeah, they were. Have you ever seen what the Air Force pilots wear?
Yeah.
These pressure suits, I guess you would call them. They were just black jumpsuits, solid black jumpsuits. They had blue berets, almost like you would imagine the United Nations. They had what looked like a meteor on a patch up on the hat, what looked like a meteor. And that's it. And everybody that kind of started to cut them off, like media, TV cameras, that sort of things, immediately almost ran away from them. There was a lot of police in the area. Of course, everybody was there waiting for us to return. It's such a famous ship that the children made. And yeah, the police seemed to be afraid of them. The government inspectors were afraid of these guys. When the guys finally reached us, they confiscated all film cameras, video cameras from the World News Service person that was on the boat. They confiscated everything. And then they wanted to pull me to the side. They took the ship's logs, all records of the boat, the GPS straight off the boat, and they were placing all these equipment things into the van. They started inspecting the boat. Down below the boat, they were holding all sorts of beeping, tweeting meters towards the batteries. in the battery bay, which we had, by the way, we had, they're 250 amps each. These are quite large batteries. They're about 70 pounds a piece. We had 18 of them, which gives us enough power to run everything on the boat forever. And these batteries had completely melted down. And they were brand new from the factory, and they were hooked up by a professional electrician, so that was almost impossible from where to go. They were taking countless photographs of the boat, and you name it, they were doing that. They had lifted the boat out of the water, and they were taking photographs of the bottom of the boat, which I found pretty much amazing. It looked like the bottom of the boat was burnt. I mean, we had special paint to reject algae. A lot of sailors would know what that is. It's a copper-based paint. No plant life can grow on this paint. And, well, the paint was gone, and it was black. And that's what I saw at the bottom of the boat that kind of stunned me, because nothing burns underwater, if you know what I'm saying. This is the bottom of the keel.
Mm-hmm.
So the boat was completely crippled, so they placed it on land until I could figure out what to do with it. They called me into a separate area. I went into a room, and they said, okay, and by this point, this is big news over here. Now, if everybody will notice, if you Google my boat and look on YouTube, you will see the live video footage from the World News Service of me leaving. But you won't hear a word about what happened after the fact. They never followed up because their film footage was taken. They won't dare say what happened.
So when you say we'll see footage of you leaving, you're talking about heading out on this voyage.
Right. You'll see the footage of that. You'll see me heading out in some of the footage. For example, the Reuters News Service has footage of that online. And they had a cameraman on the boat, which is the World News Service, which represents CNN and everything over on this side of the world. All that film footage was taken. In fact, they don't even acknowledge anything other than the boat leaving. Even though you see their guy on the boat with a camera, they weren't on the boat. So that's an interesting story. This guy was sitting there. He said, okay, here's what you're going to go outside and tell the media. By this point, there was, must have been 800 TV cameras outside and reporters.
All right, let's hold up on what you tell the media, because we have to step away for a break. And when we come back, we'll pick up right there with what you were instructed to tell the media. And there's also a little matter of you being questioned about where were you during all this time. So we'll get that in as well when we come back from this break. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Just as we went to break, the connection between us and Captain Robert McDonald was broken. Now, we've got him back online. There's not a problem. But let me just say to Black Rose in Washington, D.C., and Not On My Dime in Richmond, Virginia, try that crap again and find out what it feels like to be in a federal court case. Yes. We know who you are and where you are. All right, Captain, let's pick up with where we left off. You were being questioned, and you said, we're pretty amazed by the whole procedure, but you were about to be questioned, so let's just pick up there. Well, I've got you online, but I'm not hearing you. Okay. Pretty interesting, isn't it, folks? Tell you what, Captain, let's close this connection, and I will call you back right now, okay? And we'll just see if we get the Captain back online with us here. Are you back with us, Captain? I can see that we have the connection, but we're not getting any audio from you whatsoever. Well, apparently, your Skype is not going to work. Let me just double-check something right here. And, well, I got to tell you, Black Rose and Not On My Dime, if you have indeed done this, made it impossible for the captain to talk to us, we're going to expose you in federal court, and we're going to expose you to the news media. Now, if you happen to be operatives for some secret alphabet agency, get ready to be famous. If you think it scares us or intimidates us, you're dealing with a wrong guy. Not scared, not intimidated. I will take you on. All right. Captain, we cannot hear you. No idea why. How about call me on our line, our telephone line, and we'll spend the next few minutes that way, and we'll try to see if we can reestablish contact via Skype. This happened the other night, folks, when I was talking with him, and I actually... we had to get on different computers to be able to do this. Okay, Captain Rob, back. Are you with us now?
I hope so, am I?
You are back with us via regular telephone.
Okay.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Well, it's expected.
Yeah. Okay, you were telling us about this. You were about to be questioned.
Correct. Well, if you remember what I said earlier in the show, is the ship was out at sea and the rescuers came, and I was wondering how they made it to us at such a rapid speed.
Right.
Well, as it turned out, on shore, they said, okay, Captain Rob, for 4 hours, the shore-to-ship radar system, you disappeared. Where were you? And they have to ask this question because of drug boats and what have you. Are you there?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, well, I said we were right here the whole time. We were right at that location the entire time. And, okay, we were missing for 4 hours. And he looked at the watches and other objects that they had taken, and, well, they were set at the exact same time that their system said we were missing. So he dropped the question really quick. He told me, okay, you're going to go out there to the media now, and you're going to say you struck a container. And I started laughing, and so did my assistant crewmates, and the assistant captain started laughing. I said, you want me to go tell the world media that we struck a container that can move at 14 knots? You know, do you really expect me to go out there and do this? He said, you will do it or you will lose every sponsor. Okay. Whatever you think will work. And actually, I was being quite sarcastic. I went out to the Dutch media did cover this part, and the world media didn't. The world media just was dropping the whole subject right there. I went out to the Dutch media and the European media, and I said, okay, there was a container that chased us at 14 knots, came up under us, lifted our boat out of the water, dropped us back into the water, and just flew off with F-14s in pursuit. And I saw these men looking back at me very, very, very unhappy. They got into their truck and they drove away. However, one thing they said worked. The sponsors, a lot of them, dropped away. However, in another round, my sponsorship started doubling. And probably within 6 weeks after the event, the ship was totally rebuilt, totally brand new, totally ready to go again. So I announced the following summer, I said, for the following summer, I will be heading back into the North Sea, back in the same direction, to the same locations. And as we headed out the following year, and I believe I sent you the photographs of the follow ships, we had the most hugest blockade of military and coastal vessels I've ever seen in my life, pretty much blocking our path. So rather than go straight across through the NTS, which now I had a name for it, by the way, they called it the North Sea Triangle, something never spoken of by anyone in Europe. Almost every sailing captain knows about it, and there is a lot of references to it, but no information on it.
And so,
eventually we did take the southern route, a different route. We did make it all the way over to the south of Europe, delivering our toys. We had 10 tons of toys in the ship, little stuffed animals, and we did deliver them to every single port for children in hospitals. That was our goal.
All right, now this North Sea Triangle, you know, you told me about this, and I went online and started searching for any information I could find about the North Sea Triangle, and you're right, it's just not there.
No, it's not. But I did notice at that time that the map is marked NTS, and that was done somewhere in between 1640 and 1540 and the year 1600. Was marked NTS with the skull and crossbones.
Okay, and so NTS would stand for what?
I'm sorry?
And the NTS would stand for what?
It's only assumptions, in my opinion. North Triangle.
Mm-hmm.
I can only assume that's what it means. I mean, this was done, and there's nobody to ask. This is an extremely old map. That map was seized from me. Now, almost a year to the day that this event took place, me and some of my other crew members took sick suddenly. I went into the hospital, and they said they did a complete MRI scan of my whole body. They said, you have a cancer, and they did a research on it, and then they said it's unidentifiable. They don't have a name for it. They've never seen it before, but it is cancer. And it's only growing in two little places in my neck around a particular little metal object. And they found what they can only call a ball in my lung. Golf ball size object in my lung, which, again, is non-biologic and they can't understand because of the size of it. And it tends to move if they try to probe it with needles. My lung had collapsed, so that gave them an opportunity to go after it. And that was removed. I went in later for a cancer operation to my neck, and they removed the other object. The doctors were mystified, and they sent the object to, as I understand it, to an aerospace company over here to figure out what this is, because they know what it isn't. It's non-biologic.
All right, we have to take a break. So stand by, and as soon as we get on the other side of this break, we'll pick up with this fascinating story. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Captain Robert McDonald, or we were. Let's see if we still are. Are you still with us, Captain?
I'm still here.
All right. Now, let me say this, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know for sure that we're going to be able to open the telephone lines tonight. Now, the reason is because the only way that we can talk with Captain Rob right now is the telephone line that you normally call. We've had some interference with communications. We know who's behind it. And by the way, let me say again to those two individuals, we know who you are, we know where you are, and we are prepared to make you famous. So if you happen to be some ABC agency operative, we're about to expose you. How does that make your supervisor feel? Okay, Captain Rob, And by the way, those of you joining us in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. It has been a rock and rolling first hour. You missed it. I'm sorry you did, and my sympathy to you. But we're glad you're here now. All right, now, how long after this strange event at sea was it before they diagnosed that you had cancer in your neck?
Just under a year.
Okay. So, and you also had some kind of a sphere, a ball about the size of a golf ball in your lung. Your lung collapsed,
right,
and it gave them a chance to go after that. Did they get it?
They did retrieve the two objects, both from my neck and from my lung. They placed it, they sent it away to figure out what it was, because the doctor said they know what it looks like under a microscope, but that's impossible. So they sent it away to a type of aerospace group, I suppose. They brought it back with EU orders to leave it locked in the hospital safe as biohazard, which, of course, it wasn't. It was non-biologic. My doctor misplaced it, and let's just say I made sure it was sent to America, but it's keeping me alive up to this point and safe.
Okay, describe this object for us. What did it look like, and what was it that they saw under the microscope that made them say it can't be?
Well, these are medical doctors. They are not electronics technicians, but this in my neck certainly looked like some sort of a communication device, is the way he put it, and the ball in my lung, he had not a clue what it could be. If you can imagine the strobe light in the old discos of the 60s, what hangs above the roof, you know, you shine a flashlight on it, and it relays light everywhere. Well, this appeared to be that, only very small, and small being golf ball size. And, there was no reason behind it. My symptoms at the time was that of a terminally ill emphysema patient, which, of course, I didn't have that at all. The cancer was not from anything they could identify, and as soon as they removed these objects, these cancers and illnesses were all gone, just as quick as they removed these objects. I've never heard back about the symptoms or any other medical aspects to it. I spoke to the surgeon who removed it personally, and I see him frequently. He was glad to get it out of his safe.
Okay, now
being told what to do.
Yeah. All right, let's go back on board the ship while the event itself is taking place. You were informed once you got to shore and you were being questioned that your ship disappeared from radar for 4 hours.
Both ships, my ship and the large container ship that was sitting near us. I said, well, how did you get to me so fast? That's how I got the information I received. How could you guys possibly travel 12 hours in under 30 minutes? And he said, no, our boat, our follow ship was racing out there almost 8 hours at the speed they were doing, 50-plus knots, but they were still took them about 8 hours. And I just stood there with my mouth open. I didn't understand that. Then I heard the Swedish, I guess he was Swedish, the Danish captain on the other ship who pulled over to us. His story was just too weird, so they dismissed him offhand and just asked him to clam up and leave or lose his captain's license. And he was saying our ship was 4.5 feet out of the water.
Okay, now wait a minute. He says that his ship was, or your ship?
My ship. That's what brought him out of the shipping lanes. Not that we were in trouble, not for the flares, only that he recognized it as a Viking ship when he did look over at the flare. And the calm waters around the boat got his curiosity, like I said, from childhood stories from their childhood about Viking ships that could fly. And it all had to do with that same stretch of water. Going back to the year 700, I learned later, from this particular captain, his report was our boat, he came out of the lanes because from his angle our boat was out of the water, literally out of the water, which of course sounds insane and impossible.
But you felt it when you were dropped back into the water.
It sure felt like we were in the air being dropped, just like a kid would drop a ball in the water, because everybody hit the deck when we made impact with the water.
All right, have any of the other crew members become ill?
Yes. Two other crew members had the exact same symptoms I had within their neck, without the problem in the chest. I was the only one to have the problem in the lungs.
Did they have anything removed from their neck?
Yep, also. But they're from different countries, so I lost contact with them completely.
Mm-hmm.
Their emails and phone numbers and everything just vanished off my computer, although my computer hadn't crashed. I've been in contact with one recently, only recently. And he, at his end, also lost contact with the other crew members. We had a crew member out of Alaska. We had a crew member out of Poland. We had crew members from just everywhere. I won't mention the other countries, but yeah.
Everybody's information disappeared from each other's computers.
Mm-hmm. Pretty quick.
Well, I wonder if it was Black Rose or Not on My Dime.
I'm not computer brilliant, so I can't begin to say how all this works.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very possible. These names keep returning again and again, and even tonight, so.
If they just keep jacking with me, they're going to be famous. Photographs of their locations, addresses, if possible, their telephone numbers. I will publicize the living hell out of this, because it is a crime that they are committing. And if they happen to be doing this at the behest of any government agency, that's a government agency committing felonies. And I will expose that, too.
Well, every time I have tried to get the story out so far, there has been interference to where I couldn't, mm-hmm. in one way or another. And some of the biggest names in the newspaper business who normally aren't afraid of anything immediately backed off the story.
Well, that's courageous.
Whatever threat.
Isn't that courageous?
Freedom of speech, eh? All right.
You know, one wonders whatever happened to Woodward and Bernstein.
Mm.
Aren't any like that anymore. Those guys took on powerful, powerful administration and won. But where are people like that now?
I don't know. Where are the lawyers that defend us? Anyway, I took the ship against all their recommendations, and I completely had it rebuilt again. And I decided to continue having fun with the children, continue delivering toys, and now I made it the world's first paranormal platform, which is for hunting ghost ships and so forth, giving me the right in paperwork to go any direction I want in the sea without being followed. We'll see where that goes later on. The dream of the children, which we had to stop, was because of a lack of sponsorship. Actually, at the moment, we need one really good sponsor. I want to do something nobody has done in 700 years. I want to cross the Atlantic Ocean in my Viking ship made of ice cream sticks. That was always the big dream. So I'm out there searching for the one good sponsor. I know he's out there somewhere.
How much money do you need for that?
Not much. The ship's already here. Just whatever it takes to feed the crew and house the boat if we hit a harbor. Somewhere around $20,000. And believe me, when we set sail this time, we will have the entire global media following every little move, so they'll get plenty of promotions out of this one. Probably forever, because it's also world history.
Yeah. Well, you could get over here to the United States, make a little visit over there to Washington, D.C., and go knock on the door of Black Rose.
That's my big dream.
Yeah.
That's my big dream.
Yeah, take a little trip down to Richmond and knock on...
Could you imagine this boat going up the Potomac after all I've been through? Exactly what they do not expect. And the best part about my boat is it's made of wood. The way it's constructed, the lack of metal on the boat, is it looks like a tin can in the water on radar anyway. And unless you know exactly what you're looking for, you won't see the boat.
Well, I certainly hope that you can do that. You know, this ship has made history in so many ways already. And this is an absolutely phenomenal story of what you've been through with this boat, trying to just basically you had none of this planned. You were just trying to get over to England and deliver some toys. And so, you know, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing.
That adventure in itself, heading over to England with the toys, is on again. We have a group on Facebook called Extreme Ghost Hunters, and I'm now a part of that group. If you look them up, you'll see me there. We are planning a fundraiser. We are planning to go back to England in the boat, and I am still game for going to America. But it just takes one adventurous sponsor.
Well, we've got some folks out there that could probably do that and never feel it, so hopefully some of them will get in touch with you. All right, now you you have had the boat, what is it, registered or certified, or what is it called, where you've had it specially designated as a paranormal research ship?
That's it. Well, I got with some good attorney friends of mine over here in Holland. They're extremely liberal, so you can find good attorneys, and I have a lot that represent the boat for free. They do the work for free. I gave them my problem, and I said I would like to go anywhere. I want to go without escorts, without any government interference legally. And so they found a way. I am going to be the re-registration's coming up. That's been accepted already. I'm going to be the world's first paranormal platform at sea. That's for ghost hunting, UFO hunting, whatever I wish to do with the boat.
And you don't have a background in all of this strangeness and all of this UFOs and stuff like that, do you?
I still know very little about what happened to us out there, because my entire life I understood UFOs were over your head and not under the water. I've never heard of that before in my life. I've only started looking into it fairly recently because I was trying to deal with, you know, staying alive and keeping my ship together to think about these sort of things. Now that I'm quite well, I'm starting to look into all of it. I'm enjoying the UFO world. I've made some good friends in the UFO world. I've made some good friends in the ghost hunting world. And I noticed that of all the things going on in the paranormal world, there are no ships prepared for it. So I wanted to at least lead the way with a ship made by children, create the first paranormal platform at sea.
Well, since you're not, I mean, this is a lot of this is new to you, and you're not. This is you said you're still learning a lot of stuff in the UFO world. Let me tell you about the, and you may know this term by now, but if it's under the water, we call them USO for unidentified submerged object.
Okay.
And the U.S. Navy has actually, U.S. Navy submarines have actually reported some passing them at incredible speeds that they could not possibly attain.
Well, if you had asked me half a year ago, even that soon, about if you had told me the story about I would say a year ago before we had our mission, if you had asked me just before we set out from Den Helder, me and my crew, about USOs, we probably would have started laughing. If you asked us about UFOs, we probably would have started laughing. If you mentioned ghost ships, we certainly would have started laughing. Until you actually experience these things personally, I can imagine a lot of people's skepticism until you actually experience it yourself.
These, I'm going to call them men in black that you described. They were in a black van. They were wearing black jumpsuits, blue berets. Have they continued to attend you in the way? Have they continued to be around what you're doing?
Only recently, when I was in the Baltic Sea, I started spotting them again. Shortly after your show, we started seeing lots of them again. Actually, during your show, we saw a few of them, maybe two. Now they're all over the place out there, so all operations have stopped, I think, probably for the season, because the weather also changed for the worst and hasn't gotten much better. And for safety reasons, I think everybody just shut down the whole project. Yeah, I have seen these guys again. I still don't know who they are. At the time, I had a big Reuters news agency TV camera come running up to me after I did your show. So that's what I meant by your show is very, very popular. He came running up to me. Hey, I heard the Kevin show. Can you talk to us for a minute? And I said, look, I'll give you a whole lot of free stories if you just go tell me who those guys are. And I said, they are, in my opinion, they're some type of spies. Of course, that was an immediate better story. And he started running after them. And they actually started running away from the camera pretty quickly. That was the most fun I've ever had.
You see, I say it all the time.
I had a call back from this big CNN guy, and he said, my God, you gave us one hell of a – sorry, you gave us one heck of a good story. And he's on it.
Well, I say it all the time. When you turn the lights on, the cockroaches run.
Evidently.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't like the size of that camera or the dish the guy was running behind him with, because they knew that meant live. They can tell you to stop filming if it's not. If you don't have a satellite dish around you, they can say stop filming or threaten you. At least they can even threaten you. But this guy had the van following him with a live dish, and they knew they couldn't get away with anything, so they kind of went the other way really quick.
So
as I saw it, I actually witnessed the reporter jumping into his satellite dish van. They didn't lower the dish. They started chasing these guys. So it was the funniest moment of my life.
Outstanding. Outstanding. I love it when the cockroaches run.
It was fun for me.
Yeah.
But I know, giving out the story, because I've tried for so long, and this is the first opportunity to do it. And look how much interference we're having, Kevin. Look what's going on.
Yeah, well, let me say...
trying everything to stop this.
Let me say to Reuters and to all the other major news media that listen to this show, let's do the right thing. You guys track down Black Rose, and Not On My Dime. Black Rose is in Washington, D.C. Not On My Dime is in Richmond, Virginia. Track them down. Knock on their door. Find out who they are. See if they're wearing black jumpsuits. That would be a great story. You guys in the major media, come on, do a Woodward and Bernstein on this.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, I would too. I would too. And let me say this. You know, I'm really tough on major media. But I have some major media journalists and reporters that are friends of mine. And I know that they very often go out there, they do a good job, they get the story, they report the facts, but by the time it makes it to the air, it's been rigged. And it's not what they wrote. It's not what they produced. That happens a lot. So when I'm talking about major media, I'm talking about that finished product that comes out over the air for the public to see. And I got to tell you, that finished product is the reason major media is losing its ratings so fast they almost cannot hang on to the sides of the toilet while they're going down. It's but that's why it's that finished product.
Well, I tell you, Kevin, as long as I got you on the air and the whole world is listening in, I want everybody to know, because so many children and people support this ship from around the world by heart. I want them to know this Captain Rob is not going to stop his dream. I'm still breathing. I'm heading to America, this ship, and world history. I know a sponsor will show up from somewhere, and we'll get the job done.
You know, there are a lot of people capable of sponsoring that trip that listen to this show. I mean, they are very much into this genre of information. And they're not nervous at all about paranormal or the world of the strange and unexplained. They're not at all. And they're very much for let's get the information out there. Let's get it you know, let's stop all of the embargo on the truth and let's get the information out. So maybe somebody will do that. Now, we're 3 minutes away from a break. And are you still with us? How about that? We just lost our connection again. All right, we're about 2.5 minutes away from a break, something like that. And we are going to, I don't know, folks, I really don't know. You know, maybe we can get him back on the line. Maybe we can reestablish connection with him on Skype. Don't know. There are people out there that I'm challenging tonight. There are people that I'm challenging because they challenged me. I don't lay down and roll over. Okay? It's not gonna happen, morons. I don't lay down. I don't roll over. I'm not a pushover. So, you know, you can do what you want to do, and I will expose you. Believe me, I will expose you. I will jerk your drawers down, and the world will see what you're made of. Keep it up. Keep it up. And if you happen to be a rookie at this, and you think that's just bravado, you better go check. You better go check the history. Well, I think this is a fascinating story. I really do. As I said, I don't know if we're going to be able to reestablish contact with Captain Rob, but we're going to try. If we can establish contact with him via Skype, then we'll open the phone lines for you. If we cannot, we will see if he can reestablish contact with us via telephone. And if that doesn't happen, we will open the phone lines, and I'd like to know what you think about all of this. It is one of the most fascinating stories I have ever heard. And as you heard, Captain Rob doesn't quit. In that respect, he's very much like me. So for the rookie morons trying this, you can frustrate us a little bit. But you know what? People around the world are still hearing this. And in addition to people around the world hearing this, they are hearing you do what you did. And I do have the means to make you famous. I do have the means to expose you. I will expose you. We'll see how you like the sunlight. I bet you're just like the cockroaches that he described for us. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. During that break, we'll see if we can reestablish contact, and we shall return right after this.
Listening to the Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We have lost contact with our guest, Captain Robert McDonald. What an amazing story he got out there before contact was broken. They shut down his Skype connection, so that even though he could answer the call, he was not able to send any audio to us. It was all working on his end, but it wouldn't work. Everything on this end was working, but it wouldn't work. So he used a telephone and called us. And you heard what happened. We're going to go ahead and open the telephone lines. But I can just see it now, in Washington, D.C. Black Rose in Washington, D.C., man, they're stripping the apartment down. The computer's already been carried out. And, you know, it's, you know, they're going to wipe the disk. They're going to try and sanitize everything. The same thing's happening over at Not On My Dime's place in Richmond, Virginia. And these people are just about to get not a promotion, not a promotion. All right, to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hey.
I'd like to compliment Captain Robert.
Oh, yeah. Wow, what a story, huh?
Yeah, but not only that. You see, my biggest beef with the powers that want to be is they try to override free will through intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't buckle under.
No, he didn't. In fact, he sent a Reuters TV crew chasing after these guys. That's great.
Yeah, I love it. So I just wanted to say that. And my personal opinion is if they try to force you to sign a non-disclosure contract or something like that in the military or any other branch of the government, it's trying to intimidate you to surrender your free will, so scrap it.
All right. I don't know if hang on, Brent. We have Captain Rob back on Skype, but I don't know if he can transmit to us or not. Let's find out. Captain Rob, are you there?
I'm here. I don't know if you can hear me.
We can hear you. Can you hear him, Brent?
Yeah, I can hear him.
Okay. This has been quite interesting, Captain Rob.
Thank you. We had a loud concussion go off in the neighborhood, and we had all power go out. So the power just came back on, and the backup generators went off.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, the whole grid went off. As far as I could see, for miles around, everything went black.
I guess they figured if they couldn't get us offline one way, they'd try another way.
Yeah, but I got a satellite dish I can transmit from. Like I said, I have 10 different ways. Like you, Kevin, I have about 10 different ways to transmit.
Brent, why don't you say to Captain Rob what you said to me?
Captain Rob, I want to compliment you because they tried to intimidate you and you didn't give in. They wanted
they're
you to
still,
surrender your
still
freedom,
trying,
your intimidation,
still
and you didn't do it. Good job.
I'm never going to give in.
All right, Brent, thank you for the call. Do you have any other question or comment?
Nope, that's it.
All right, thanks for the call. Folks, the telephone line's open. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, we understand it can be a little bit expensive for you to make that international long-distance call. So, if you're outside of the USA and outside of Canada, you may use our flash message option. The flash message option works like this. Go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show. And right above that picture is a link that says flash message. So you can type a flash message and click submit, and it will come to me. I will read your question or comment, and we'll ask our guest to respond to it. What do you think that loud concussion was, Captain Rob?
I have no idea. It was at least a half mile away, so if it was about this subject, they have no idea where I am, so it's okay.
So it likely is not related to this subject, right?
I would assume not. It was pretty far away. And if it was, I hope it was about this subject. They're too far. They have no idea where I am, so I prefer it that way.
Well, just before you were able to reestablish connection with us, I was saying I can see it now. In Washington, D.C., Black Rose and others are frantically stripping the apartment, trying to sanitize it. The computer's being hauled out. They'll wipe the disk. No one will ever know they were there. Down in Richmond, Virginia, Not On My Dime is frantically doing the same thing. And in the morning, there comes that meeting with their supervisor.
Well, I noticed one thing, Kevin. When you said you were going to expose it, and I mentioned the Reuters news agency camera people on it, suddenly all the problems cleared up.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
well,
happy
you know.
For the moment.
So, what, the problem's cleared up with your Skype connection?
With our connection.
Uh-huh.
Completely cleared up. And all the trouble I was having I was having a great deal of hacker trouble during our last conversation. That went away. So.
Yeah. Well, let me just say to these morons again, we have the means to track you. We have the means to identify you and your location. And I have the means to expose you, so keep it up. Just keep it up. I will make you famous. I'll give you to Reuters. How's that?
Oh, I think they're on it already. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. None of this, you know, a lot of people, when they get their first exposure to this kind of stuff, this kind of wackiness that people in the shadows try to pull, it scares them. You don't seem to be scared by it.
I'm not afraid of it. No way. I've already faced death in the subject one time. I'm just not worried about it. As long as I'm breathing, I'm teaching the children and the public and families anything is possible. And to date, 30 world record, you know, that's what I hold now, and I'm not about to slow down at all. I have a dream, and as most people know me, I pit bull my dreams, and I have done this my whole life working with children. I'm bound for America. As long as I'm breathing, I'm on my way. That's how I look at it, and I'm not letting it go. The ship has been hurt already two times, and has been reconstructed twice by me, physically, my hands, and my crew members. We put it back together again and again. I'm not slowing down. And if all sponsors drop away, I'm not slowing down, because I know there's one good one out there now. And with the whole world watching on in this world history idea, look at the promotions they'll get forever, for almost nothing in price. We're not doing this for any kind of... I have the Seahart Children's Foundation, so everything I'm doing is for children benefit. I profit in no direction from this. At this moment, I'm just happy with getting $25,000, just what we need to feed the crew. That's all I'm looking for, nothing else. I'm not looking to get paid in this at all. I'm just looking to make world history on behalf of the children who built the ship.
Well, you also need a ship to follow you across the Atlantic, right?
That's very important, to have a follow ship. That's very... to have a support ship is to film the adventure, excuse me, to prove it's happening, yes.
And of course, should something else weird happen and you need to be rescued, you've got a follow ship.
That's very important to us. And now we're replacing something. We found a new communications, a satellite phone, where we can do live streaming from the boat anytime we wish. So it's almost as if I dare them to try to stop us after that.
All right. Now, you know, we have some folks that listen to this show that have their own private yachts. And this might just be an adventure for one of them, you know, to be a part of making this history. How would they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me. I guess the easiest way is straight through. Just look for Robert McDonald on Facebook. That's probably the quickest way to contact me.
Okay.
Or you can write, and I invite everybody, actually, to write to Captain Rob at planet.nl. I get quite a few thousand emails every day. I have a following close to around 75,000 people around the world, families and children. I've been in every single boat magazine known to date. I've been in every type of magazine known to date, including Ranger Rick in America, which was my favorite magazine as a kid. I made front page in the Ranger Rick, which I was more proud of that than all the other world headlines. I was very proud of that. And, this ship is literally followed by every single country. Literally. They're constantly contacting me through the media, for all the way out to China. Really following this really close. I've got letters from Russia, China, just the whole planet, India. So I'm still breathing. The mission is still
okay. Let me tell you, we just got hit.
I see it.
Yeah, we just got hit. And I don't know if the video, it looks like the video stream, I heard it first. I heard the pop. And
Well, I'm getting a message over here. How are you doing this? That's the same message I had the last time we did your show.
Yeah, how are you doing this? Well, we're doing it very well, you cockroaches.
Actually, I don't know why. They don't want my story out. I mean, it was photographed. It was videoed. They didn't get all the footage. And if they want, you know, I sent you a few interesting photographs.
Mm-hmm.
I would say release them immediately if they continue.
Well, look, you know, when we got hit just now, we heard, I think the audience heard that pop, and the video stream froze up for a little bit. The camera went dead, and now it's back. I switched to another camera shot, and so we're back. And so the stream ought to still be going. But let me ask you this. You said you just got a message. How are you doing this? How did they send you that message?
It's a hack message. Straight through hack and into the email.
I see.
My email flashes. I open up my email, and it's written about, oh, I guess, about 4,000 times all the way across the page, over and over and over, the same message.
I see.
As if I'm going to answer that.
And does it give you an email address that it's coming from?
I have ways of finding out that as well as you. And
yeah.
I get the same thing. This is from Black Rose.
Black Rose. Hello, Black Rose. You need to be cleaning out that apartment. You need to be swabbing the deck. You need to be clearing out of there because we are on to you. By the way, how is the weather in Washington, D.C. today?
Oh, I tell you what, Kevin, this is the most, getting out this story, this is the furthest I've gone with it in a year and a half, is on your show. Every time I've attempted it anywhere else, immediately, it's killed.
Well, you know, the moron cockroaches tonight need to understand that the major media guys are listening in. They are listening to you do what you're doing to us tonight, you morons, and you're providing them with evidence for their story.
Well,
you know, are you brilliant
you what,
or what?
I will make them happy while I'm on your show and talking. Okay, people, a container that dropped off of a cargo ship somewhere that weighed maybe 50 tons did not sink. It chased us at 15 knots. Okay, there you go. Now I said what they wanted me to say. Maybe they'll back off.
Well, you know, the thing is that if they want to keep doing this, that's okay. But they just need to understand major news media are listening. They are taking it seriously, and they're documenting your poo-poo. All right. We are going to take a break, and we will be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and I think we've got Captain Rob back with us. We're going to attempt to see if we can hear him. Captain Rob, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. Well, let's see if, I don't know who it is, maybe it's Black Rose, maybe it's Not On My Dime. Let's find out. Ah, gone. Okay.
You scared somebody.
Okay, then. Well, the telephone lines are open, and the telephone number is 623-444-5889. Give us a call. Join the party, ladies and gentlemen. It's rocking, it's rolling, it's real. So, Captain, what happens next for you?
Well, right now I am planning to take the ship and reconstruct it, of course, this winter, and take it down the entire east coast of England, in my stopping at every single port to deliver toys, on my way to America. That's my big dream. Most likely, I'm working directly with the group now, Extreme Ghost Hunters, for a charity run. They're helping me set it up over in the United Kingdom to do this charity run straight across something never been done before. That's a ship sailing full of laden with toys. That's our treasure always. And stopping it at every single port from London up to Scotland. And from that point, I really hope to be in the position to wave goodbye to everybody and head across the Atlantic like the Vikings of old.
Does crossing the Atlantic, do you have any apprehension about the crossing?
Absolutely none. I have been preparing for this for years and years and years. I am aware of all the possibilities, and my ship is completely, at least this next time around, my ship is totally ready for all possibilities.
Even being lifted 4 feet out of the water?
Right. Our ship's held together before. It's a very flexible ship. It's not going to come apart. It's literally been in the water now for a year and a half since my cancer. And it was recently checked over and inspected, and it's still hard as a rock. This ship is still ready to do its thing.
Well, I can only say that's absolutely impressive. Who would have ever thought ice cream sticks could do this?
Well, you know, that's the big mystery when we were doing it, because even the glue company didn't have an answer. Their prediction was this glue we invented would last about about 1.5 years, which is 1.5 years,
uh-huh,
before it would start degrading. Now, here it is many years later, and the ship still just as solid as the first day we put her in the water. Who would have thought it?
Who would have thought it? Well, look, if you do get to make that crossing, I hope that I can be present when you come ashore. I want to do a live show on board the ship, and you said you'll have live streaming capabilities. I'd like to do a live show from on board the ship with you and invite the cockroaches to come see us live.
We are setting up to have the live streaming from the boat anywhere it could be in the Atlantic, and now we have so many beacons on the boat, it can't just, quote, vanish anymore from radar. It'll be seen, and it'll be tracked. It can be tracked. I'm having it set up now that it can be tracked by you, the public, on Google Map. I'm having it tracked that way so everybody can watch the ship.
I think the audience is absolutely terrified to call in because I took on these people trying to hack the show and trying to keep you from talking with us. And, I talk pretty tough to them. I guess it sounds tough to most people. Believe me, folks, that isn't even the beginning of tough. But I think I scared the audience. What do you think?
Well, that could be, but it's good if you, the audience listeners, will call in. This will keep them at bay for quite a while. At least it gives them the opportunity to hear from you, the public. We the people, as I always like to say.
Well, there's nothing to fear from these people. They operate in shadow. They operate in darkness. They absolutely cannot stand exposure.
What I find amazing is when you discover something out at sea, be it in the Baltics or, in my case, what happened to me and my crew in the North Sea, why are they going through such extremes to hide it? You know, what's wrong with saying hello to our neighbors if this is what's going on? What is the big paranoia? What is there to be afraid of?
Well, I don't think you and I and everybody else really has anything to be afraid of. But it is possible that the militaries and the governments may have ticked these people off.
Yeah, it could be, trying to conceal things they have been doing for the last, I guess, 40 or 50 years. It could be.
Could be.
They're more paranoid that what if these things can communicate with you and me on a quite normal basis?
I think they can. And by the way, I hope that whatever that thing is that your ship ran into, I hope they're listening to the show tonight And I would invite them to call in. I don't know that I would speak their language, but I bet they can speak mine.
Oh, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. You asked me about the rudder, mm-hmm. which I didn't get a chance to answer because of all the interference. The rudder, if you had struck something with this giant oak rudder, it's about 7 foot tall, 1 foot thick, solid oak, because we just attached another one to the ship. It's attached by two giant iron bracket hinges so that it can move back and forth. If it comes off, that entire side of the ship comes off. That's how secure it is. When the boat was pulled out of the water during the inspection, one of the inspectors said, "How did this happen?" And I looked over the side, and it looked like it was just melted away. The iron holding it, what was once a rudder, it looked like it had just been cut with a welding torch or something else. And the cuts were so smooth, almost like the backside of a nickel. I was just in awe the whole time, and I've never had any way to answer that. It's just what it was. And we took off those brackets. Of course, I kept those, and I stored them away. And we had to rebuild the entire iron brackets again, holding on the new rudder. But that was one of those unexplained situations in this story.
We have about a minute left here. What's the upshot of their investigation? What did they determine?
They determined that I was going to, from what I understand, the outcome, I never got anything back. They never spoke to me again. The only thing I can get out of this is I was not to say anything other than we struck a container, point blank, end of story.
Oops.
That was it. I've never heard back, never got my records back, never anything back. The hospital got interference. The surgeons got interference. And it was an ongoing thing until the doctors misplaced the items into my back pocket and I shipped them out of the country. So, that's
well,
where we stand today.
There you go. Okay, well, I want to thank you for being with us again, and it's a fascinating story, and I do hope that someone out there who is capable of sponsoring your trip across the Atlantic will do so. And I hope you'll come back and talk with us again.
Oh, I will. I'm always here for you, Kevin.
All right. If you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment. Okay, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Absolutely a rocking, rolling, amazing 2 hours, wouldn't you say? I wish you had called in. Thank you, Brent, for being brave enough to do so. And, you know, the cockroaches don't scare everybody. And they shouldn't scare anybody, nobody, because there's more of us than there are of them. My friends generally call me Steel Eye. I'm not sure what the cockroaches call me. Maybe they call me Target. I don't know. Does not matter. But in any event, my friends do call me Steel Eye. My enemies, they call me that among other things as well. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.